They did not talk on the way back, which, though the moon had almost disappeared now, she found with a dreamlike certitude. Later, as they travelled on, they never talked much, he being taciturn by nature, she by training. But they did talk, and he understood now that she had been shattered, and slowly, slowly, she had been reassembling herself. And what she had needed from him throughout this difficult process, and still needed, was the most basic, most trivial of all commodities, and yet among the most valuable, like food to eat, water to drink, air to breathe, human companionship. And now he realized his own need for it too. They had steadily been traveling north, he following the vague idea of where his promised land of jewels may be found, she following his lead, or had she? She asked him for his destination now, though she already knew the answer. He told her about the land of jewels in the north that he was seeking, his determination, born of despair, to find it or, more likely, to perish trying. Amazed at how much he found himself confiding in her, not only his plans, but his hopes and his fears, and his conviction, deep inside, that he was no closer to his goal now than when he had set out. "It's not a land where these jewels are found," she said. "It's a mountain, Stardock." "You know it?" he asked, both excited and surprised that she would have actual knowledge of what to him had only been the vaguest of rumours. "Yes, I know it," she said. "As well as anyone does. It's an old fairy tale, a mythical topos of desire, a paradigmatic place to yearn for. Like the Fountain of Youth, the Philosopher's Stone, or the Golden Kingdom of El Dorado, and the Jewels of Stardock. These myths not only span the ages, they also span the worlds." He did not reply, nor did he doubt her words. "I'm sorry," she added into the silence. "What do we do now?" he finally asked, not even consciously aware that he had said "we," as if the land of jewels had been her goal too, now lost, as if it were obvious that they had a common decision to make about a plan they would pursue together. "I need to reach a town," she said. She had things she had to do now that she had reassembled her shattered pieces, even though she did not know if what she was looking for was any more real than any of the myths that she had talked about. She could not do nothing, though. She was alive, and this meant that she had to try. "Which town?" he asked. "Where is it?" "Any town," she said. "In a town, there was the hope that she might find hints, rumours, traces, signs, anything to go on from. There is one to the north. We should be able to reach it in a few weeks, before winter sets in and makes it quite unpleasant here in the open country." Yes, of course, she knew where they were, where they were going. She had known it all the time, he realised it now. Their directions may have overlapped, both heading north, but she had set the course. He doubted the casual way in which she had said, "any town." He was sure that this town in the north was her preferred target, for otherwise, though he had no idea how she would have accomplished it, they'd have been walking west, south, or east, with him willingly following the direction she'd have chosen. He shrugged. It didn't matter. In his face, she read her mistake, in wording, in inflection, in body language. She wasn't quite up to her regular form yet. This was important to know, but he was not an enemy and not a threat. "It's going to be all right," she said, and he believed her. It wasn't without hardship nor without dangers, but they reached the town on a grey and windy day, before the winter would make things harder for anyone without a roof over their heads. For her, the town was the place to go to. If anything was left of the old order, any tiny seed around which hope might begin to crystallize, it would be where people lived and gathered, where none of the old hiding places, meeting places, dead letterboxes, caches, or hidden signs would still exist. For those had always had to be ephemeral. But the rules for finding them, if any recent ones had been set up, might still apply. And one of the rules had always been, look to the north. For him, the town, first of all, meant rest. He had not expected it, but more than half a year of traveling and surviving had worn him down. Maybe, once he had some understanding of this place, he could look for work, but not on the first day. They paid the gatekeeper what he claimed to be the official fee for strangers entering the town, plus what he claimed would keep him from having them thrown into the castle dungeons for some crime he didn't bother to name. They still had coins left to rent a room. Like everywhere else, due to so many deaths, houses stood empty, and the rents for rooms were low. Neglected and in disrepair with a few panes of unshattered glass left in the window frames, the building still had walls and roofs and doors, though not much of the furniture was left, having been used for fuel in the first winters of the darkest years. There were trees enough in the surrounding woods, so that wood wasn't so scarce now, but the craftsmen were scarce who could do more with trees than chop them up for firewood, and the sawmills and workshops had been destroyed, and the carts and the roads had lapsed into decay, and the horses and oxen had long been slain and eaten. The town behind its walls hadn't seen new destruction in the last few years, only further decay, but the surrounding countryside had. The coins that were left would buy them food for maybe a week or two. "Why have you always only taken the coins of those bandits who attacked us?" he had asked before they had reached the town. "Why not the jewelry?" She explained it so that he could understand. "It wasn't ours to take. Never take more than you need, it brings bad luck. And then the dead bandit's friends will shrug off the loss of a few coins as well as the loss of a few of their companions, but they might feel compelled to hunt down those who had taken the more valuable stuff. And jewelry is conspicuous. It draws attention to us. Attention is bad. And who knows where they got it from? What if we tried to sell a piece and someone recognized it? Not worth the risk." What she didn't say was that she had also done it to protect him. She didn't need the jewels, but he... greed. A stupid move, and she'd have to kill him. "Take more than you need and it brings bad luck. Not worth the risk." It was about noon now. They ate a simple meal. Unlike accommodation, food was expensive, with so much of the agriculture in ruins. But there was food, which they ate without investigating too closely into what it was, and they even treated themselves to a jar of wine. She saw to it that he drank more than she did, not too much though. They returned to the room they had found before they had lunch, on the third floor of a crumbling house near the town wall. A small dirty room with a window looking out across a narrow street onto the peeling plaster of the rear wall of some larger building. The window, its glass long gone, could be closed with a wooden shutter. Almost a luxury these days, and the main attraction which this room held. The room was empty apart from a very roughly hewn table, a number of pegs on the walls to hang things on, and several blankets on the floor, dirty but not downright disgusting. Severe exhaustion, in combination with the wine, made him succumb to the overwhelming desire to roll himself up in two blankets and lie down on the floor, with a third blanket, which he folded up for him, to serve as a pillow. He slept almost the moment he touched the ground. She hadn't wanted to lock him in, but she wasn't comfortable with leaving him, dead to the world, unprotected in an unlocked room. On her way out, she spoke a few words to the landlord who lived on the ground floor, a thin, elderly, stern, and tight-lipped man. A few friendly words in passing, hardly more than a greeting, accompanied by a nod and a faint smile, so casually spoken that he could not even really remember them afterwards. What he did remember, though, was the ice-cold shiver they had sent down his spine, and the absolute necessity, whatever happened, to keep the sleeping man on the third floor from any harm.